Hell yes, from County Line.
All right. My name's Kelly. I'm an addict. And I want to thank, welcome if you're new. Stick around. If I horrify you with certain things, stick around. There's a marathon meeting. And you can definitely go and get it out. Don't get loaded. I want to thank, this is where I usually blow up, right? People who know me. I want to thank the convention committee for not listening to my speaker tape and asking me to speak. I saw one of the members. I went to a football party, and one of the members of the committee was there who had sent me the text message that you've been invited to speak, you know, at a workshop. And when I saw the person there, so you listened to my tape? And she's like, no. And I went, good, because I share openly about bestiality in that tape. And obviously, that wouldn't qualify. Well, the room went quiet with that one. But so I have to share. So I was asked to share. I'm making a decision. We made a decision, inferring, you know, it's inferring step three. And I have to share because I'm really stuck on something in my head. When I was asked to share, I immediately went to something in my life, and I was stuck on it. So I've got to share it, and then I'll take a deep breath, and then I'll say, hey, blah blah blah, and then we'll go from there. It comes to making decisions, and what has always plagued me in a way is there have been times in my life where I was given no preparation, no advance notice, no opportunity to evaluate risks and benefits, and I had to make a decision instantly. And that decision completely changed the trajectory of my life. And often I'll fixate and I'll think, what if I had done, right? And I'll give you an example of this, and this is why I got to get this out, because it's really stuck in my head. I was in the United States Navy, clean, right? And in the Navy back in the day, right? When you're 9 months out, you have to call what's called a detailer. And the detailer will then give you orders of where you're going to go, right? And I remember I was in Nanaimo, British Columbia, and it was time to call my detailer. And I had to wait on the phone, and he finally gets on the phone, and he starts rattling it off. This, you know, this cruiser, this destroyer, this aircraft carrier, you know, this place. And I had to make a decision. And the opportunity, they gave me a ship, a submarine tender out of Guam called the USS Proteus, AS-19. And I said, I'll take that. And where my life went as a result, right? I ended up in Guam, right? I went there with a wife and a three-month-old son. And 9 months later, I was divorced, paying child support for a child that wasn't mine for 18 years. I had to share that because there's when it comes to the, you know, we made these decisions, when we make these decisions, right, in recovery, I like to think of it as there are decisions that are made for me, And then there's decisions that I make, right? And I struggle a lot with decisions that are made for me, right? For example, right? A decision was made that I would speak first. Like, I didn't want that fucking decision, right? They didn't ask me, right? Because I'm panicked. I'm like, how am I going to condense? This is my 42nd season in recovery, right? How do you condense 41 years of recovery into 25 minutes, right? And so I really struggled with that. But so I had to get that out. So I got clean when I was 18. I was in high school in Portland, Oregon. I like to think, you know, as I'm going to try and stay on topic and not go too far off. That light's really blinding me too, by the way. I'm sorry. I'm autistic, and so obviously I'm like, what the fuck? Right? and then I have the white blinding, right? So I can't see anybody's face now, right? Because I'm blinded by that anyway. I just wasted 5 fucking minutes on fucking light. Anyway, so no, he can't. It follows me wherever. So I also have to apologize. I don't know if I have to apologize, but let's do this real quick. The members of AOA, raise your hand. If you want to know what the fucking weather is, right? If you want to know the weather, those people just volunteer to tell you how hot it is or what the temperature, right? I really want to thank you guys for showing up. Thank you so much for showing up. If you don't know what it is, talk to somebody that raised their hand. We'll be more than happy to share the information. It's a meeting that I attend, as well as all of you, that every day at 7 a.m. Every day at 7 a.m., I've been in this meeting. I've been struggling a lot lately, and you guys... People. Haven't helped keep putting a bullet in my head this last year. And that's another decision that I was faced with. The day after President's Day, my company called me in, 2:30, meeting with HR. And after 25 years as a contractor, 25 years as a professional, having just completed getting my PhD and being in a position that I had worked hard to get to, was told that I was no longer of value to the organization or to the contract. And everything that I had worked up to burnt to the ground. I was too old, too experienced, too educated, and too expensive. No one wanted. My resumes went out. I called in all the favors I could call in. Called all the people I knew. And I had eclipsed myself to to where being employed at a level that I was used to being at was no longer an option. And so then, okay, we're faced with I'm faced with decisions again, right? When I get in those situations, my sponsor is here, right? I'm like, I don't know about you, but I'm like, I can figure this out. I can fix this, right? And then I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna do that, right? I was at the time 59. I was 59 years old, and have been clean for at that time 40 years. And I immediately went back to being 18 years old, living on the streets of Portland, Oregon, selling plasma. That's where I was going. And I was like, I can't go back, right? And so I frantically tried to fix my life. I tried to fix, and it was grasping at straws, right? And every day I'd go to that fucking meeting. Every day I'd go to that meeting, every morning, online, right? I fucking hated being there, right? Oh my God, you know, there. Patty Yard was. My rock. When I wanted to talk shit about you, I could talk it to Patty. Patty R. loved talking shit about you. And I got nobody on there now that I could talk shit to about, right? So, I was given an opportunity. My background was missile defense, right? I worked on complex distributed software systems that monitored and launched ballistic missiles. These ballistic missiles would hit a bullet with a bullet, but better than that, it would pick a spot on the bullet that bullet would hit. And I was this, what was called a subject matter expert, SME. I was able to reach out, and I was able to contact a contracting company in Huntsville, Alabama. Roll Tide. Come on, right? Roll Tide. And they offered me a position. Right? A couple months after I got laid off, they offered me a position. And I would be making about $30,000 less a year than what I had been making. Right? But in Huntsville, Alabama, that was going to be okay. Right? So I moved, as those who are a part of that meeting know, if you're all friends with me on Facebook, you've seen me and my fucking cats in my car driving back and forth across this country, right? So I got in my car, packed up my stuff, and I drove to Alabama with my cats, taking pictures along the way. But there was this thing going on, I don't know if you're familiar with the current status of the outside issue that it's the geographic boundaries that we all exist in today, right? And there were some certain decisions that were being made. Again, being made for me, right? That they were in a hiring freeze and they were not going to hire, even though I had signed an offer letter, even though I had done everything that I was supposed to do, I was going to be sitting there indefinitely waiting. Waiting. So, I was, had just started a men's meeting in Huntsville, Alabama. Right? And they don't do men's meeting in Huntsville, Alabama, right? As special interest, we don't do that. I had just started a men's meeting, very unpopular. And I was sitting in my car, and I got an email. I wasn't going to say this, but I will. It was a newsletter that was sent out by NA World Service. I read them because I'm a nerd. You may not read them, but I do. And at the bottom it said, positions open. Project coordinator. And when I read the position, sitting in my car, I said, that's my job. And I made the decision to apply. And on the 15th of August, I started my first day. So I've been there. Yeah. I mentioned that I'm neurodivergent, right?
Right.
It probably contributed to my organization saying, "Get, let's fire this guy. Fuck this guy." Right? Like, I didn't do any favors for myself, right? I was very, very outspoken.
No.
Yes. Very, very, have very strong opinions, right? And I back up my opinions with data, right? References. I got references. But I have never been, political. I've never gotten that. Diplomacy has never been a skill that I have developed. Those who are here from AOA cringe when they said, "Will Kelly S. like to share?" And they're like, "Do we mute our speaker, or do we? What will he say?" Because I started like I said in August, and. You know, I'm coming in, and I'll just say that there has been an adjustment for everyone involved. And I've been an engineer for 40 years. I was an engineer in the United States Navy, and then I was a software engineer for 25 years. That's my background. And I'm now working for an organization that approaches solutions differently. And there has been some alignment challenges with our different points of view. And I'll just say this, because I ran out of time. The people who signed my paycheck are happy, right? And I am doing today for this fellowship things that I could have only ever dreamed of doing. And they're giving me the freedom and the trust to be creative, innovative with how I think that we need to merge into the 21st century with providing information that help us make decisions that makes it as efficient and effective as possible to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. And I get to contribute to that silently. Things will occur, I know I'm running out of time. Things will occur within the next couple of years that I'll have a part in, but no one will know that I had a part in. Right? I want to thank, again, I ran out of time. I didn't even talk about bestiality. Dang, I ran out of time. And let me tell you, there's a decision involved in that one, right? Sometimes there's decisions we make in this fellowship when we're faced with a moral dilemma that only God and our sponsor will ever know. That's all I got. Roll Tide.
All right, let's give it up, Kelly, one more time. And now I would like to introduce our next speaker, Marsha M. from Inland Region.
Thank you, Kelly, for your share, and thank you to Daniel and to the convention committee for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope on this topic of We Made a Decision. When I was thinking about the topic, I was thinking about the first time I did my third step, and that was in a detox place. But it was not the type of detox they have today where they give you the drugs to get off the drugs to get off the drugs, right? It was one of those spin-dry county beds, right? And actually it was partly my attorney that made a decision for me. He was a guy that I used to use with too, but he helped me make that decision because it was about, you know, either having to do some time or, you know, get into doing some kind of treatment. So I went into this detox house and it was like $67 for 2 weeks. And it was between either like kicking on a mat, a plastic mat in jail, or maybe I get a cot in this situation. So I picked the cot. And I had no clue what was gonna happen to me when I went into this place. I had no idea that my life would change so drastically as it has. And I'm so grateful for that. I came here in a state of desperation. The day I went into detox, so I went into detox on June 28th, 1988. My clean date is June 29th, 1988, class of 88. Okay. So the day I went in, of course, I went to the clinic. You know, I dosed. I used every drug I could possibly get my hands on, knowing that there was this kind of knowing I'd be having to do some, you know, serious withdrawal. What I was given was this cot. I was given, you know, like you wake up and you do chores, and then I was also given the program of Narcotics Anonymous. They were taking us around to meetings, and I got to see before me other people who had come before me. You know, our literature talks about our decision has to be based upon action and faith, you know. And our literature also talks about, in the basic text, it says sometimes that faith can be based upon just seeing other people who had gone before me. And I got to see that, you know. I saw other people who had gone before me and who had actually been maybe even worse off than me. And so it gave me that sense of hope, and I hadn't felt hope for a long time. I was pretty hopeless for a long time. And my disease had me believing that I would probably spend the rest of my days getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. And so, and if it weren't for the program of Narcotics Anonymous, that probably would have been the rest of my story, you know. But, you know, and I think about the decisions I made before I found this detox, before I found Narcotics Anonymous, and my disease was making my decisions for me. My decisions were being made by my lower power, right? Not a higher power. And my disease, my decisions were pretty much being based on the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. So suddenly having this kind of being exposed to this new way of life, what they were doing is they were handing me these old Xerox pages of step work, right? And they're saying, you know, do the next first step. So in this detox house, I started seeing that when I put the pen to paper, you know, there was this feeling of kind of release and relief, you know, that I would write about unmanageability and powerlessness. And, there was finally a label to all these things I had been feeling for so many years. And then the second step, got to write about sanity, insanity. And then I remember I was the only one that was wide awake all night long because everybody else was sound asleep, you know. And I guess it was my drugs that, you know, had me wide awake. And they gave me another step to write. So here I get the third step. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And something happened to me the night I was writing that third step. And it was just kind of this huge shift in my whole perspective. And, you know, and for me, recovery has been about this. It's been this shift from brokenness towards wholeness. It's been this shift from self-centeredness to God-centeredness. You know, this shift from just, you know, self-obsession to really considering the spiritual path I get to live as a result of the program of Narcotics Anonymous and the steps, you know. So I made that decision when I was in this detox house, and I've been able to make that decision ongoing since that time. And it has changed my life in a very drastic way, in a very meaningful way, you know. As a result of that decision and the following steps that I was able to do, you know, my life has really, really changed. You know, and what I find is, you know, Kelly, you were talking a lot about decisions and the whole concept of decisions. And for me, you know, it's like all day long, I'm at these mini crossroads, right? I have all these mini decisions, or you could call them choices, you know, that I get to make all day long. Some of them are, they seem inconsequential, right? But you put them all together and they become consequential. Like if I make the decision to eat fast food every day and not work out for, you know, years at a time, there's going to be some consequences. But then there's the bigger decisions too, you know. The day I went into that detox house was a tremendously huge decision that altered my life forever. You know, I have a sponsor that I totally adore, and you know, getting different sponsors along the way has been different decisions I've had to make. And you know, there's that really corny old expression, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. But that's been so true for me, that when I'm in need of a sponsor and looking for a sponsor, the right person just seems to come along. And so I absolutely adore my sponsor. She has a saying that she uses a lot, and she says, you can decide whatever you want to do as long as you're willing to pay the spiritual consequences, right? So true. As long as I am willing to pay whatever I have to pay for making a decision that might be based on something that's maybe not a spiritual principle, maybe based on my lower power once again, right, instead of my higher power. So I have learned that it's easier and a lot more pleasurable to live my life based on spiritual principles And based on, you know, what I would think that the God of my understanding would want me to, you know, be. And so, you know, there's an expression in our program, and it's the road gets narrower. And I have found that that is absolutely true. That when it comes to my choices in life and the decisions I make, the road does get narrower. Once I know, once I've taken step work and I've learned that when I do this, it hurts somebody else, or once I've learned that this is the consequence and this is the spiritual consequence of this action that I'm going to do, I can't pretend I don't know. Once I see something, I can't pretend I don't see it anymore. So I have to become responsible for what I know and for what I become aware of through step work and through that process of learning more about me and peeling down the layers and getting more closer to the truth and closer to the core of who I am. And so, you know, the road does get narrower. I can't pretend it's okay to do certain things now, because I have to carry that. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I'll get, you know, into doing stuff, and then I'll say, wow, more material for my next fourth step. You know, I got this resentment now, right? So, you know, decisions are consequential. There's a lot of things that are behind what I do and my actions. I've made a lot of decisions in my recovery, and a lot of them, when it came to relationships, I can say that I made some pretty bad decisions, really bad ones, you know. Hey, it wasn't the best. The last 20 years I've done a lot better, okay, I'll say that. But, you know, first 17, 18 years were not good. But I learn from them. Each time I learn a little bit more. Learn a little bit more about myself, right? Anytime I wanted to learn more about myself or needed to learn more about myself, all I have to do is get really close to someone. I'll see all the worst in me come out, you know? So it's something that's an ongoing process and something I'm always working on. And that's why I continue to do step work. You know, one time wasn't enough for me. I know there's a few different philosophies, like, you do the steps one time and that's all you have to do. For me, I have to do them over and over again. And for me, I'm the type of addict that needs to keep going to meetings. When I don't go to meetings, I will feel myself downward spiraling, you know. I need all of you. I need the meetings of Narcotics Anonymous. I need my friends, you know. The fellowship has provided me with something that I really truly believe is something that money cannot buy. I mean, I think people would die to have what we have in Narcotics Anonymous. The friendships, the closeness, the intimacy we get to know through other people, through working steps with other women. Two women here in front of me that, you know, I have gotten very close with as a result of doing step work together, you know. And what I love about this program is that I get to have friends who know me, the good, the bad, the ugly, the worst, the best about me, right? And they love me anyway. What do you know? And I get to do that back. I get to do that back. And what a gift. It's a tremendous gift that we get to share here in this program. And so I have my meetings. I get to make decisions about what meetings I go to. I get to make decisions about the type of, about not the type, okay. I get to make decisions about the people I choose to have in my life, you know. And I can love all of you, but you know that there's going to be some people I choose to have in my life. And that's something I've learned over time, that I just have to make those discernments. And I kind of separate that from judgment, because I think we're, as human beings, we're given this ability to make judgments, right? Out of survival, right? I have to make judgments about whether it's okay to walk into the street and get hit by a car or not. And so, you know, I've been given this ability to make judgments. And we talk a lot about judgment in the program. And I think that at some point, it's funny because I remember working steps one time with Diane, and we were talking about that line that you cross at some point in making judgments about someone or somebody. And, you know, I can have a discernment, I can have make a decision about something or somebody, but when I can cross a line and start making harsh judgments about that person, that's, you know, okay. Maybe I'm violating some spiritual principles, and I'm not living by spiritual principles when I'm doing that. But I do need to make those discernments at times and decide, you know, make decisions about who I want to have in my life. Because my life is precious today. When I think about the person who walked in the rooms, when I think about the person who walked into that detox house in 1988, I don't want to go back to ever being that same person. You know I've got some characteristics about me that are still there, sure. But I choose to be a different person in the world today. So I do need to sometimes choose and make discernments about who I have in my life, too. You know, I have, I've done a few things in life that I think initially maybe my motivation was feeling, because when I look back, you know, like they say that some of us had this disease way before we ever picked up. That's me, 100%. Right? I look back to when I was a little person in the world, and I can tell you that I never felt I measured up. I never felt I was good enough. I always felt like I was kind of standing outside of the circle looking in. And so that didn't necessarily fully change just because I got into recovery. I had to really do some work. And I have. I've done a lot of work on me. But there's been this sort of ongoing theme of not feeling deserving. And I don't know if any of you have that, but just a wild guess that maybe you have. But for me, you know, when I got to the amend step, so I'm kind of skipping over steps, but, you know, when I did get to the amend step, an important amends was to myself. And so I had to look at what was it that I didn't feel like I deserved in life. And there was things like, you know, higher level degrees that I didn't feel like I deserved, and I would just kind of not go there, you know. So I learned that I needed to overcome those barriers and overcome any of those old ideas I had about myself that said I wasn't worthy, I didn't measure up, you know. And so as an amends to self, I got to do that. I got to do things like this addict, the same one that walked here in a state of desperation in 1988, I have a doctorate now. You know, I've made some. This same addict has written and published 3 different books, you know. And it's just, you know, I get to do these things today. And the thing that scares me so much is to think about the person I was that walked in the doors that did not value life. You know, not only did I not like me and feel like I measured up, but I didn't have a value on life. And if you'd have looked at some of the neighborhoods I went into and the doors I knocked on, you would know that I didn't feel too much about my life, you know, like it wasn't too valuable. Today, I love my life, and today I place such high value on my life. And I really attribute that all to Narcotics Anonymous. I would have nothing without you. I would have nothing without this program. And I can never afford to forget what I came from. And so I am so very grateful to be here. You know, I've heard it said, and I really like this expression, that we're like angels with one wing. we need to hold on to each other to fly. And it's so true. I need to hold on to all of you. I've got my two angels that I rode up here, my ride or dies that I rode up here with. And, you know, and we get to hold on to each other. We get to hold on to each other in the hard times and the difficult times. You know, I've never had to walk through anything in recovery that someone had not walked through before me and that they could help me if I would open myself and allow them to help me. You know, I've had parents die. I've had things happen in recovery, really difficult things. My daughter was 4 and a half. She was about 5 years old when I got clean. So there were 5 years of her life where I was in my addiction. And if you're a woman in recovery and you have children, or a man in recovery and you have children, you know that probably some of the deepest wounds I carried were the fact that those first four and a half years of her life were spent in my addiction. And so I remember when she was five, and I didn't feel deserved to have her, you know, in my care. When she was about five, I remember driving her to kindergarten, and I remember the feeling of, I don't know the first thing about being a parent. I don't know the first thing about being a caregiver to her. And I remember sitting outside of her kindergarten class crying, because I'd watch other parents just walking their kids, making them feel self-assured, confident. They'd walk them to the door and drop them off, you know. And I would just drive up to the red curb and drop her off, and, you know. So I started really to doubt myself, and I remember just crying about that. And you know what? I learned so much about how to be a good parent to her, okay, through the relationships I developed with other women in this program. I learned how to have a relationship. And so I got to learn to be a better person to her, you know, through the relationships in this program. And it's funny how things come full circle, because one of the first books I wrote is on parenting your teens. So, you know, it's weird. God has a weird sense of humor. And the things that I, you know, I felt totally inept about when I was new in recovery are things that I, you know, I developed a confidence in. And, I kind of see it like we're all walking up this big mountain, and this big mountain is called Narcotics Anonymous, right? And we all are kind of walking separate paths up this mountain. Sometimes our paths cross each other. We get to say hi, meet each other along the way, you know, say, hi, Kelly, hi, you know. Sometimes we get to walk alongside each other, some of the people I work in sponsorship with, you know. We get to walk together along the path. Sometimes I myself find myself getting off the path a little bit, right? And I find my way back. Some of our paths might go back down to the bottom, right? And then we come back up. And then sometimes, you know, I do a lot of hiking, and I love to hike. And sometimes you get to these places, they're kind of like lookouts, you know, and you go, oh, wow, look there, look at how pretty that is, you know? And I find that walking up these mountains, sometimes we get to share that experience with another person. We get to kind of have that lookout moment. Oh, wow. It's those God moments we get to have, right? And the view at the summit is the same for everybody. You know, we're all walking our own paths, but we all get to have those views, you know. We all get to have those awakenings. And if you're new and you haven't read it in the 12th step, it does say, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, you know, we carry this message to other addicts and practice these principles in all our affairs. But if you want a spiritual awakening, if that sounds exciting to you, don't rip yourself off. Don't, you know, make sure you do the steps. For me, it has transformed my life over and over again. You know, and it is kind of to me, the unspoken promise that we get to have here. We get to have that spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. I mean, we're promised freedom from active addiction, right? That any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, find a new way of life. I have found a new way of life. I have lost the desire to use. And I have stopped using. But I also have gotten to have a spiritual awakening as a result of the step work. And I am so grateful to each and every one of you for being a part of my support group. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia. Let's thank both of our speakers.